in perhaps, you know, the world's greatest sporting precinct, right in the shadows of one of the world's greatest cities.
I used to love the roar of the crowd.
Magnificent mark taken by Walcott.
A Viking is in the time.
He gets inside.
In any way that you can see us, we can win. Listening and skin, you know, we're behind the channel.
Cotchin, just a little bit of genius.
Welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
And we made it through round one.
Yes. Not by half an inch more than the skin of our teeth, but we did go through. What was the sort of the dominant story for you from the game?
Look, the story for me was... Well, actually, I felt reasonably good that the what we'd talked about in the prediction about Carlton's strengths being their midfield versus their relative weakness at either end of the ground. I actually thought that's kind of how the game played out. Like, that despite us missing some key personnel and having some other key personnel down on form, that we just managed to scrape through, you know, some efforts from some fringe guys. You know, we just got it done, but, you know, I felt like we deserved to win.
Yeah. Look, on the issue of the fringe guys, that was sort of the standout thing to me. We talked in the preseason about how Champion Data argued that we have fairly weak back six relative to other clubs. Now, we don't need to rehash that argument, but I...
Oh, bottom... six of the 22.
Yeah, sorry. That's what I meant. Yeah. Now, I didn't necessarily agree with that analysis, but, you know, like all Champion Data arguments, they had a good case, they made it well, it's out there. We don't need to rehash a discussion we had a few weeks ago. But if ever there was a week where there was sort of the... it was the revenge of some of those people in the bottom six. It was, you know, Lambert and Lloyd were the match winners. So it was sort of the, it took exactly 1 week for that theory to be at least superficially refuted.
I know. And I thought Asprey was in our best. We had five shots at goal from the three teenagers, Ellis, Rioli and Menadue. Some other solid contributions from other guys, but yeah, and frankly we overcome some poorer games from some of our better players.
Yeah, and going back to your earlier point, you know, if there was a Carlton Tiger talk or a Carlton Blues talk, they would probably argue they were unlucky, they had more shots of goal, more considerably, moderately more inside 50s, but you know, that's sometimes how it goes.
We had more shots at goal because the AFL are thankfully now recording all shots at goal, including when you miss. We had slightly more shots at goal.
Anyway, we had more. They had quite a lot more inside 50s. If we will later in the year, when we have the stats go the other way, we will argue the other way. But let's not focus on that. A few other things that sort of, you know, if you follow social media, you know, there's sort of two stories that you heard. If you followed the media, it was the brave young Blues. They were plucky in defence.
Well, although I did, I was keeping an ear out for it, and the TV commentators were very careful not to use the word young when talking about the Blues on Friday night to avoid that embarrassment of them being 14 months older than we were. So they used a lot of terms like rebuilding and exciting future, which, you know, not talking about Richmond for a moment, but... Mark Murphy turns 29 in July. The odds of him playing a single moment of meaningful football with Jacob Wietering, you know, who admittedly had a pretty impressive debut, they're pretty much zero. They belong to two completely eras of football team. We saw a Carlton team that had one player that there was a 3 year gap in age, pretty much between Wietering and Patrick Cripps, who's their second youngest player. They've got this big demographic gap of, you know, some fringe mid-20-something players, some elite late-20s players, and a few really good prospects, and nothing in between. Like, it's going to be a long, slow rebuild, but the exciting part about it is that they might just be good enough to be mediocre rather than get some really high draft picks.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and again, talking too much about Carlton, but, and if you, I mean, some of them, the print media did run, a lot of media ran with the Plucky Blues line. But, you know, if you read Richmond social media, you'll know that you'll, and you read our Twitter, you'll see the, you know, all the stats about how we're younger and teams with the average age disadvantage we had normally have for the last 5 years. Lost 80% of the time, thanks to leader Reigns Durant. So most listeners of the show would know those two almost diametrically opposed narratives. So you know, Carlton weren't really full, aren't really as bad as people thought. I thought they were a bit like the last year of the Wallace era, where Wallace lost his job. With they sort of, because of the coaching chaos, they probably played below themselves. They're probably a good solid 8-win team last year. They're probably, if they had been well coached, they're probably a good solid 8-win team this year. You know, they're a decent mediocre team, and we managed to overcome them despite having some injuries. And admittedly, they had some of their best players clearly ran out of puff in the last quarter. But we're not Carlton Tiger talk. Let's talk about Richmond. Who stood out to you?
Yes, we are.
Individually.
All right. Well, do you want to talk about Dean? Daniel Rioli, because for me, that if there was ever a player that I was of anyone on the team I was watching closely, it was Rioli on the night. You know, the name, the first round draft pick pedigree. Frankly, that he's come a little bit from nowhere. That he wasn't playing under 18 football at the start of last year. He's come into the team. Just before the National Carnival, he's played well at the National Carnival, played well again at the end of the year, and he's tested his head off at the draft camp, and he's suddenly a first-round pick, despite, you know, perhaps a thinner pedigree than we normally associate with a first-round draft pick. He's played all the NAB Cup games, and he's pretty exciting. He's a long way away, but he's pretty exciting.
What stood out to me from his game was he does the... He does the Morris role already. He has about the same statistical profile, but the thing that Morris did that was good was those long, searching, earnest chases, I used to call them, when he was playing. And I notice he does. He chases hard. Like, the coaches have given him...
He's quick, and he's got a big tank. Yeah. Like, he should be effective at that role.
Yeah, so the coaches have slotted him in. And the thing is, because he's quick, unlike Morris, who's just hardworking... He got that tackle against who was against? Anyway, it doesn't matter. You know, that chase down tackle.
Yeah, lovely. Well, and just that, I was really excited actually by the technique on the tackle. Like that for me, that showed a lot of football smarts, knowing how to tackle that way in that situation.
Well, in fairness, he doesn't really have much choice, because if he grabs around the hips, he's going for a ride. He's not going to slow anyone down at the at 65 kilos, so he's doing the right thing.
No. As we mentioned on a previous show, he's the lightest player to play for Richmond since 1971. So, actually, I was encouraged by the way that he cracked in.
And my favourite thing I think I read about him was someone said afterwards on I can't remember which poster, mentioned that they've heard rumours that the playing group had been astounded by how much he's improved since he arrived at the club, and he's very coachable and he's hardworking, and maybe in some ways he resembles his uncle. In the his uncle was, you know, frankly a bit of a slackerer in at draft camp, but when the lights are on and the crowd's up, he works very hard, and that's what our reality seems to.
I think that's perhaps a bit harsh to Cyril, because I'm sure he's worked really hard at you know, becoming a better footballer, but also that, you know, he has great strengths and profound weaknesses as an endurance athlete. Daniel's his own man, and that apparent, you know, I heard the same things about him being a bit fumbly when he first joined training, but he did. The confidence of him playing on after Jack was paid the free kick, because he thought he could run in and kick the goal. I loved that. Even if he stuffed it up, I loved that he had the confidence to do that. Even though, you know, 4 months into his Richmond career, he would know how Jack Rewalt feels about people playing on when he's got a free kick 20 metres out from goal.
I don't know. I'm not so, because I don't think it was the percentage shot in no matter who was kicking. But I did like the way he chased.
No, it wasn't the percentage thing to do, but that in his first game of football in front of an enormous crowd that he had the self-confidence to do it. That was the thing for me. Because, you know, a big part of succeeding in AFL football is just having the self-confidence to at least, you know, fake it till you make it. Like the... he's got physical talent, and if he can continue to improve and believe in himself, I do think that'll help carry him.
Mm. Yes. I mean, yeah, I appreciate all the... I appreciate the point. So that's probably enough about someone who got 7 touches. Lambert was the match winner in the fourth. I was extremely impressed with his
game. He was the match winner. Who did you... have for 3 votes?
Oh, easily him.
Hmm. It was either him or Dusty for me.
Hmm.
Dusty's was a more fourth quarter performance, and in terms of rampaging moments when we looked awesome, Dusty featured in a lot of them.
He was very good, and maybe that's me taking him for granted. I loved when one moment at the 50 he pulled his kick and went short past to Ellis, who then turned around. I think it was Ellis who then turned around and snapped the goal.
Was Corey Ellis.
Yeah, yep. I was very impressed by that. That's the old Dusty of 2 years ago wouldn't have done that.
No. He was more in... he had 6 clearances, which is well above usual for Dusty. But actually, speaking of Corey Ellis... I just had a moment of thrill when I saw the 32 picking up the ball at that time. Like, I just thought, oh yeah, I feel pretty good about this, and he kicked it. Oh, you know, for a guy, you know, his very very thin senior resume, but I like his kicking so much already. That's good.
It is. He needs to get more of it.
He does. He did get knocked off the ball a fair bit. Like he made a. I was impressed with his decision making when he did get it, but he didn't win a lot of the footy. So
he took a lovely mark as well, and he is good overhead. Hmm,
did take a nice mark.
He's in the midfield rotation. He spent a bit of time in the centre square, and you know, he needs to get more of it. But it was he'll keep his spot, and good on him. So you just...
Well, we'll get to that.
All right. So Lambert, a couple of things I was particularly impressed with. Obviously, he was running very hard in the last. If you looked at his last 4 or 5 games of the season last year, he was pretty good. He had a terrible elimination final, not Robinson Crusoe on that, but if you looked at the sort of the 4 or 5 games before that, he was very strong. And he's taken that. Admittedly, this is his highest ever possession game, but he's taken that form into a new season. And I like that he's got tricks. The hand pass he gave to set up Lloyd's second goal was just superb. I wrote down at one stage he's like a strong tackling boomer, because boomer's not the best tackler in the AFL. So yeah, I've been I was really impressed by Lambert's game and showed a lot of promise.
I know, and we certainly needed it, because I, you know, our midfield was beaten on the day. Looking at the numbers, all of Brandon Ellis, Chimp, Miles, and Shane Edwards were all at least 4, if not 5 or 6 disposals down on their usual production. So somebody had to pick up the slack.
I will say this. I was going to bring this up later. Edwards played pretty well in the last quarter with a broken hand.
Yeah.
Because if you look again at the tape, he's, and once you know he has a broken hand, he's not vintage Titch, but he's all right.
It clearly happened in the third quarter. And yeah, that was impressive.
So I was going to leave this till a bit later, but I think it's been very well publicised. We do have to talk about the Cochin game. Not a complete car wreck. He did actually fight back.
No, he did. I liked that. And even in the first quarter, when he wasn't winning the ball all that much, he was still cracking in reasonably well. Yeah, but it wasn't his day. Was a bit disappointing.
It was. He actually, very early on, he was blatantly held and not paid a free kick, so that may have got him going. But he did a few other things in his centre square work in the first quarter that was, God, it was pretty awful. But he did some good things later. I think there is, we do need to accept, if you look at the AFL player ratings, which are not perfect for all positions, but they're not a bad indicator for midfielders. If you add up all the midfielders, he's about the 40th best one in the AFL. He's not the best one in Richmond. He's the third best one in Richmond, and Miles is breathing down his neck. We need to stop, Richmond supporters need to stop treating him like he's the 2012 Trent Cotchin and have those expectations. He's a good player, but 2012 was a long time ago, and we need to accept, you know, this week's game, it wasn't a bad game from him. It wasn't all world, and it was disappointing for him. It was below his averages, but it wasn't that far below what he normally gives us. I think people are sort of judging him harshly on a too high standard. He's the 40th best midfielder in the AFL. On average, every club in the AFL has two midfielders better than him just by pure statistical output. So he's a good player, but let's stop sort of flogging him to death when he doesn't get 30 touches and six clearances a game.
Yeah, I do. I mean, we've talked about those ratings having their quirks before, and I don't think they quite do justice to the extent that he is extremely important to us as a ball-winning midfielder, and particularly winning those first possessions. And, you know, he's not, because he's not getting a lot of easy touches, his kick rating is well down. But
most AFL players have guys who play those roles, and most AFL, there are plenty of guys who are more productive in that role. I'm not saying he's a bad player. I'm just saying we need to, you know, Mark Murphy is... rates considerably better on the same scale. And Mark Murphy beat him when he played one-on-one with him on the weekend. Didn't play against him all game. That wasn't true. Like, there was a stage when Murphy was having a shot at goal and Cotchin got the blame. He wasn't actually playing on Murphy at the time. It got rotated around. But, you know, I don't want to over-labor this point, but I think Chimp is suffering a bit from a delayed reaction of coming down from an expectation that was... quite a long time ago now.
Yeah, but he's not that much. His output isn't that much less. You know, I don't fully agree. I think there's, you know, there's always stories that we don't know about how their role and injuries. You know, he's clearly not to quite the same level, but I think it's still reasonable to be disappointed when, you know, even last year he still had some really good games, and I think he's capable of that again.
He had some good games last year. This was a below average game for him, no doubt.
Mm-hmm. I was a bit frustrated with Brandon Ellis, particularly in the first half with some of his kicking. I do think he's extremely valuable in that. Like, he did seem to be playing more of a half-back role compared to last year when he'd been more in midfield. But he, you know, he was a bit down, but he was still part of the reason we won, thankfully.
He was part of the reason we won because he ran hard in the last.
Yeah, he runs hard all day, and his run to provide an outlet is a... you know, is something we really rely on. I mean, McIntosh does that as well, but, you know, Brando's just that much better a ball winner. But it's the kicking's still not that sharp, unfortunately.
Kicking's not that great, not giving that great a physical presence. Took a nice, lovely mark. But, yeah, he's actually, like Chip,
his tackling's okay, and it has got better in the last couple of years, but yeah, it is. You know, there's a sense of wanting a bit more.
I don't think he's not the. I mean, he's not. Yeah. Anyway, he's not the hardest guy at the contest of the club. He's not the weakest either, but he's not an absolute machine.
I think he gets a harder time from fans than he deserves because of the role he plays.
Mm. But he needs to. Both he and Cochin have weirdly played back to back bad games over with a long break in between. So they both need to pull their socks up.
Hmm. Well, it is actually one of the reassuring things about the game is that sort of, you know, hopefully, you know, this is hopefully what we can expect. Maybe not quite this good from Lambert, but you know, not that far from it. But also, you know, Dusty's come in playing well. Dave Asprey, I liked his game.
16 touches.
I didn't love it.
Which is pretty good. I think he needs to, even though his disposal efficiency wasn't great, I think he needs to trust his kicking more. He was hand passing off a lot and giving short passes. His disposal use was a lot like a ruckman's. And I think he's actually a better kicker than that.
For a 25-year-old, you know, he still hasn't just fully established himself. And I think his confidence... He lacks a little bit of confidence as a result of that. But, you know, 5 intercept marks, 7 marks, like he. It was a pretty good game. I think it was... for me, it wasn't a big drop-off from when Chaplin is playing well.
You know, it was interesting. We didn't talk about this, and we should have talked about it in the opening. The sort of the team selection was almost like a little bit of a mini-rebuild. We went young, as pointed out, we were early 24s, which is not ridiculously young, but, you know, we played quite a collection, Morris, Ellis, Menadue, and plus Asprey. It was a significant amount of fresh blood.
Yeah, the Bachelor and Chaplin and Hunt all played 23 games last year, and... None of them got picked.
Yep, and
now Hunt might have had not the best preseason, injury wise. But yeah, it was definitely a recasting of the team and sort of I think trying to, you know, in dropping Batchelor, sort of just getting perhaps a little bit more attacking as well.
Potentially, it makes some sense. There is one obvious thing they could do to improve the to make the back line even more attack. Well, change the balance a bit more in favour of attacking. But we'll wait and see whether Hunt's will replace Morris in the near future. But that's what was my reading of it as well. That was deciding that and recruiting Yaron, which unfortunately doesn't seem to be. Worked, but thus far, but it is indicative of a broader attempt to make the back line less one dimensional. Having said all that, Hooley was one of our best players and a key link man out of defence in a very traditional Richmond way, and had 24 touches.
Yeah, and Rance was his usual self, and we relied on him. I did notice, you know, the great Sean Hampson trade off of where you get. The trade-off of you get better attempts to advantage, but you lose out on kicking for goal, and he's not as good at getting back and contesting in defensive 50. I thought actually our defence was a little bit wasn't quite as good as usual in not conceding big marks to opposition players.
Well, I'm not convinced he did that any better than Marich did, but we did win the hit-outs, we won the clearances, we won the centre clearances. A lot of that had to do because we dominated in the last quarter. Dimmer gave Hammer a lot of credit for that in the post-match, said that, you know, one of the reasons we got on top in the last was because of Hammer. On the tape, I couldn't see it as much, but he was okay. Probably the worst bit about his game was the fact that not only did he miss that shot, is that everyone on the ground expected him to miss that shot, and we all expect him to miss that shot next time he has it as well. But he wasn't terrible.
No. We've managed to talk for quite a while without talking about Conor Menadue, and he was also one of my favourite things about the game.
There was a moment in the second, early in the second quarter, where he was going to the fat side. He was deep in defence, and he was going to the fat side of the ground, and Carlton had it covered, and he had the self-possession to switch back and go to the thin side of the ground, which a lot of players don't do because they're instinctively trained not to do that in junior football, but actually often they should in AFL because the fat side switch is better defended. And he went back and he thumped it long and got it to a contest to our advantage. And I was very impressed that he had the self-possession to do that, which is part of a smaller point, a bigger point that I love his choices with the ball. Now, he made one bad decision late, but other than that, overall, he's one of my favourite decision makers on the team.
I know. And along with covering a lot of territory, like literally both goals were the result of him just burning off his man. Yeah, it was a good game. And, you know, he's super quick. He kicks it long. There was a lot to like. I mean, he's a guy who only needs 20 disposals a game to be extremely impactful. But, yeah, 14 was still pretty good.
Yeah. So, yeah, I was going to say same as Ellis. He needs to get more. But, as I said, I agree that if he got up to 20 a game, he'd be a fantastic player. And also, just briefly, Sammy Lloyd's...
He was next on my list. I only watched 3 games this week, but goal of the week, surely.
Sure, and I just loved it. It was so Johnny Football. It was the touch of magic late in the game when magic needed to be done. He did it. So yeah, I was really pleased because we all knew that Sammy had it, but in him, and he's only done it in 1 or 2 games thus far. Kicked a few kind of key goals. And, you know, it's definitely, I think a lot of fans are liking the sub rule. Pretty likely, based on last year about how Dimmy used the sub, that Lloyd would have been subbed in halfway through the third for someone like Corey Ellis. So the sub rule is, I think, very much helping, is working in Sammy Lloyd's favour.
Look, he looks good. We said in the pre-season, you know, he's really toned up from a couple of AFL pre-seasons. He doesn't look like a suburban footy player anymore. He's still not super quick, but look, he tackles well. I think he's earned himself a decent run in the seniors.
Yeah, well, let's hope he gets one, and because of the new rules, he gets 4 quarters when he plays. So we'll see how he goes. But he certainly earned his spot next week.
So that was all I had from the game. Anything else from you?
Look, I just wanted to quickly sort of recognise that a very Tyrone Vickery game, but we can't get past the fact that yes. he had 3 goals and was the most effective forward in the ground, despite his usual tie moments.
That the frustration of him getting himself in a good position to mark and then not completing the mark. Yeah, it's... That's so tight.
Ben Griffiths. Not much. Good round the ground as a ruckman, I thought.
Yeah. I was impressed by his ruck work, actually.
I like his kicking a lot better when he's not kicking for goal. He did hit the Ben Griffiths magical barrier of the 11 possessions. He hit it at 10, but, you know, it's very much a very, very stereotypical Ben Griffiths game. But I'm wondering, looking at the ways the Swans are using Tippett, maybe it's a viable option to think about him as a first ruck in against the right team.
Oh yeah, I had the same thought as well. I've got my long-term research project of looking at, you know, rucks around the AFL who might be available at the end of the year, and part of me does wonder if Freo fans think the same about Zach Clark that we do about Sean Hampson. But yeah, I did have the thought about Ben Griffiths as a possible first ruck candidate.
You could do what the Swans are doing with Tippett. Certainly, I'm sure has got certainly a few in the AFL thinking about using that kind of player. And let's not forget, Ben Griffiths is not a great shot at goal. So, and other clubs will notice that. Other than that, I didn't want to mention. I find Steve Morris much less annoying in the back line, but I'd still hope
as well. But Yeah. Yeah, it made me nostalgic for Taylor Hunt.
Indeed. I think that's enough from the game.
Well, we can cover off the VFL extremely quickly because they played a practice game on Friday, and all the reporting from that game is that Ben Lennon kicked four goals, played really well.
Also, we should note that a few people who are at the game, we were not, said that may have accused Ben Lennon of running forward of the ball a little bit, and I don't know whether he marked any balls that were going through anyway for goals and kicked the goal himself. That certainly wouldn't be the first time it's happened, but it's certainly fortuitous timing that Ben Lennon's kicked four goals when Lids and Edwards are going to be missing this week.
No, look, I actually think that Griffiths got the game ahead of him this week. They did that. They decided they needed a bit more backup for Hampson in the ruck, and sort of they needed Griffith to carry more of the load there compared to what Griffiths can. Yeah, I'm unconvinced about the three talls. I think I'd be happy to go with two, you know, Jack, Vickery and Lennon, and just play a bit smaller when or play Marich resting up forward.
Yeah, you could do that. I mean, I think the big loss of that is the fact that you lose Vickery in the forward line, who's now extremely important, I think, to our structure. I think Jack is playing decoy a lot to Vickery these days. But we digress. Chaplin also played well in the VFL, we hear.
Yeah, but I don't sort of I can't see in the unless there's an injury, it's hard to see how we play seniors actually, and just at this stage.
No, not while, you know, being behind David Asprey, your chances are good. But you know, as we mentioned, David did everything right on Thursday night.
Well, the weirdest bit of off season. News, almost surprising, was the club winning a contract to manage some leisure centres down in the southeast of Melbourne, which apparently sort of may be part of a broader strategy of having less reliance on gambling revenue, which is, you know, certainly interesting if true. But yeah, I didn't really take much away from it from that. Do you want to talk about Collingwood?
Oh, just on that, it was interesting they did their demographic analysis of the region and decided that they wanted to target people there. But as long as it's not a distraction from core business and doesn't wind up as a net money maker, it's fine. But wait and see. I know some people are very impressed by it. I'm a bit like you, a bit ambivalent, but, you know, open mind.
You know, there's not, for me, there's no... there's no risk of Dan Richardson or Dimmer worrying about if they've got enough personal trainers at any particular centre. So,
No, I'm thinking more of the board. But anyway, moving on.
Well, so if Thursday night was a challenging game for us, tell the football club that I'm involved with at the moment, we had a function on Saturday to watch the Swans game, and we ended up turning it over at halftime. It was so uncompetitive.
I'm impressed that you made it to halftime.
Well, people were having sausages and beer, having a pretty good time without the football, but yeah, they had a terrible night. They got beaten. Swans had 95 more disposals. They got beaten badly in the ruck. 31 more inside 50s, which is a flogging. And this was not your father's Swans. They're actually both teams were about similar in age to us, and the Swans had some impressive debutants, like all that and a lengthy Collingwood injury list headlined by Swan, and still side bottom going head high in a Dan Hannanbury in an incident that seen him rubbed out for 2 weeks. Yeah, it was a pretty bad night.
It certainly was in the and now the it's now the battle of the slightly surprising coaching extensions about which clubs, how they'll feel about it. And I think right now we're in, well, the odds, it went for the game being even odds to us being moderate favourites. And certainly I felt a lot better once Swan and, importantly, Sidebottom, who's a superb player, were rubbed out. I started feeling a lot more confident. Actually, as we were talking on Twitter, I got a... we got a message from a known Richmond commentator, who I won't mention, but he's known to people on who follow Richmond on social media, that Steele and Swan are much bigger impact than Titch and Lids. If you look at the net statistical loss from their absence, that they're a massive loss to Collingwood. Mm. In fairness, I think Titch and Lids are extremely structurally important to us, but either way, they're big losses.
Let's not begrudge the fact that Lids is a all Australian half forward flanker. But yeah, Swan, I put it out on our Twitter. They, 29 disposals and a goal a game. He's killed us for years and years and years. And it's the encouraging...
And he still got it. He was second in the best and fairest last year.
Yeah, and it's in terms of where Collingwood's rebuild is at. They've sort of, because they've traded, unlike Carlton, they've attempted to, done, frankly, an impressive job of rebuilding on the fly. So they've traded away a lot of their mid-20s guys. So it's they've got an older group and a younger group. And the key for them contending this year was keeping the older guys on the field and fit and in form alongside the Treloar, Adams, Sidebottom, and other young players. Well, you know, Swan's career is under a cloud, and Travis Cloke, it's fair to say he's pretty frustrating.
He was extraordinarily bad on the weekend. I'm quite a Travis Cloke fan. Like he was, when Collingwood were good, he was, I thought, a very underrated key forward. He got to a lot of contests.
To the extent that any Collingwood player is capable of being underrated.
Mediocre Collingwood players get rated highly. I think there is a collective prejudice against really good Collingwood players, but I digress. But yeah, he was extraordinarily crap on the weekend. Just could not get a touch. With no obvious physical ailments. And by the way, another little twist to this game: Collingwood have three midfielders who were closely linked with Richmond.
I had that in my notes as well. So yeah,
the
Treloar, Taylor Adams, and Hugh Greenwood, who we chased all three of.
Yeah, so it's sort of the ones that got away ball for us. It would be very satisfying to win for that small side note. I am far more confident than I was after Thursday, having seen Saturday night. And the other thing is, we should recognise for years and years they had the woodenness, but. Last year, we actually turned it round, and Buckley has them playing very different football, and I think matchup-wise, for whatever reason, the wheel has turned.
Look, I'm hoping so. Darcy Moore scares me. Like, I think perhaps what you say about their elite talent not being recognised, but he's a really good young player. My hope is that he's going to end up replacing Cloke rather than both of them being good at the same time, because he's still young and not very consistent. In terms of, they're actually a pretty even team in terms of talent. Having talent, their defence is pretty good defending one on one, but they're actually quite poor coming the other way. So I think if we can, you know, get good pressure on their defenders, I think that'll see as well. Because the one thing they don't transition all that well, and they don't defend transition all that well. So that ability of what players say about picking the moments to play fast and when to play slow, that for us is the key to winning the game.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, just on a psychological level, we are going to get the kitchen sink thrown at us because there's, you know, that was a fairly stinging, it was... They'll be expected to respond strongly. And
you would think so. They've been humiliated in a high profile game, and they're not. They're certainly not a bad team. They had a very lopsided season last year where they had a really soft draw early on, won a lot of games, had a really hard draw later on, lost a lot of games. But, you know, in between there was a team that wasn't as good as us, but wasn't that far off it. So, yeah, it'll be a really interesting game.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, I'm going to be nervous and horrified, and fingers crossed we win.
It's still early season, though. Like, even if we'd lost to Carlton, I was sort of emotionally prepared for it. You know, it wouldn't have been the end of the year had we lost to Carlton. It won't be the end of the year, whatever happened, or the start of something wonderful, if whatever happens on Friday night. But it's obviously much better to win, because with our current injury list, you know, we need to rack up the W's for keep someone in reserve.
I know. Look, it's only Yaron and Conker who are more than a week or two away, so hopefully, you know, we can get a pretty solid team out on the park in a couple of weeks. But yeah, if we can survive this week, I feel like, you know, we've got Adelaide after that. You know, it's a challenging but not impossible start to the season, and it'll be a very good start if we can beat Collingwood.
I'm Andy.
I'm Nick.
We're Richmond Tiger Talk.
I used to love the roar of the crowd. Magnificent mark taken by Roy Hart there.